How's Dad? Starring Nicole and Jemmy and Maria QK.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Mother Knows Death. Let's get started with the story of the week.
Our first story this week is all about women paying to get salmon sperm injected into their vaginas, hoping that they could boost their sex lives. So let me start off with the use of the salmon sperm has been used in Korean culture heavily for years to treat aging skin. So according to this New York Post article, they're saying DNA extracted from the salmon sperm has the potential to regenerative qualities, working not only on the superficial level, but sinking deeply into the skin. So the salmon molecules also have this anti-inflammatory effect that essentially rejuvenates skin anywhere on the body. So now they're using this to help women in their vaginas and to boost their sex lives.
So we've talked about this before when you go through menopause. I think we were talking about it with Halle Berry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, she was misdiagnosed with a roaring case of herpes and she ended up just having a dry vagina from menopause and rough sex. Well, when you have this decrease in estrogen, it thins out the lining of the vagina. I feel weird when people call it skin because it's not really skin. It's more like the inside of your mouth. Like, you wouldn't call the inside of your mouth skin.
No.
That's why I think it's like really weird that they call it that sometimes. But this is supposed to help with that. And of course, when I was reading this article, I was like, well, that sounds awesome for your skin on your body too. But of course, do you want to know what my main question was?
What?
How do they get the sperm from the salmon? Like, do they have to jerk off the salmon? Like, what do they do? I looked it up in case you're
wondering. Yeah, tell me, because I've never really wanted to go to that part of my mind where I'm thinking of fish sperms. Tell me how it works.
So salmon, at least, they don't really have sex like you would think about any other animal would have.
Well, yeah.
They have external fertilization. So the female has eggs that kind of go into the water, and then the male has sperm that goes into the water. But they do have like a little hole. So they... like a urogenital exit, kind of. So they're like, oh, they have to massage the fish in a certain way to make it kind of ejaculate.
Ew.
Which is, it's really weird. Well, the grossest part is that I looked it up on YouTube and there's like videos of what this sperm looks like. And it's kind of disgusting thinking that comes out of a fish.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really want to think about the scientist that has to sit with the fish and like rub it off, you know?
Well, I used to think about this when I was in cytotech school, actually, because we used to look at cells under the microscope all the time, and it would say, like, frog sperm or something. And I'm like, I would just say to the teacher, like, so do they just, like, have little tiny hands, like, jerking these things off or whatever? Like, how are they getting this?
Oh, my God. Yeah, but so this has been used for a long time. Jennifer Aniston even said she had a salmon sperm facial a while ago because she'll do anything to try to keep her youthful skin. So it definitely is interesting. And I mean, if it's helping women, then that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's just just thinking about using any sperm on your face or in your vagina is just like a little weird.
Yeah, it definitely is weird.
All right, let's get on with some celebrity news.
Okay, so in Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, which, side note, like, there's this super famous movie called Dead Poets Society, so of course everybody's getting the album name confused with that, and I just heard the other day that a news outlet had to retract an entire article because they referred to it as The Tortured Poets Society the entire article.
Yeah.
Because it is confusing. Like, what was she thinking? Anyway. In her song Fortnite that came out, she admitted that she was basically a functioning alcoholic. The line is, I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me. I was a functioning alcoholic till nobody noticed my new aesthetic. So as your children are Swifties, have you heard this song?
Yes, I've heard it, unfortunately, many times because Maria and I were at Target bright and early on last Friday to pick up this album because Lillian has a record player and they wanted it first thing in the morning after they stayed up till midnight to listen to it. So yes, I have heard it. So if you remember back on April 3rd, we reported that there was this association with heart disease and women who drank more than 8 drinks a week. I think I've said this in the past, at least on this podcast as well, that I feel like she kind of does, she refers to drinking sometimes in her songs. And also, I feel like all the times I see her, she always has a drink in her hand or whatever. And like, it's her life. She could do whatever she wants. And honestly, like, all of the stress and constant harassment she's under all the time. And I did read an article recently saying that, like, she can never, ever be alone, which is, she must have terrible anxiety. So I could kind of, like, see maybe why she self-medicates a little bit. But we also did a story back in March about how there was this increase in women that were drinking alcohol. It was up to excessive alcohol use, up to 35% in women. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's good. I guess she said that she was chilling out because she was getting ready for her tour or whatever. So it doesn't seem like it's a problem anymore. But I mean, on top of that, just like break up all that stuff. I mean, and it was during the pandemic. That's just like hard for people.
Besides just the social increase of people drinking more alcohol and what the data says and everything, I just think she's in situations more where you might have a drink. Like somebody like us might go to an event or a wedding or something once a month, maybe, if that. She's going to these things like every other day. So just think of the situation she's in where she just might have one drink a day. I did read that she said she significantly pulled back her drinking because her worst nightmare is performing hungover the next day. I mean, I couldn't imagine going to work hungover, let alone perform for 3 hours straight and have to be dancing and singing and everything.
Yeah, but dude, 1 hour a day is like a lot of alcohol. It's 31 drinks a month or 30 drinks a month. And
no, I get that.
They're considering like excessive use is 8 or more a week.
I don't know. What I'm getting at is I don't think this is a unique problem for somebody in her situation, being a celebrity, having to go to so many events. It's definitely not good. It's good that she identified it and pulled back. Yeah, we've definitely seen her drinking. And if she knows it's an issue she has and she could keep it and slim it down to maybe just once in a while, then that'll ultimately be healthier for her.
All right. Let's talk about Christina Applegate. This story was a little... The title of it was a little yuck, but...
Yeah, so Christina Applegate recently came out that she has MS, and she just said that she had been suffering from... You say this. I'm not even going to try to say this.
Sapovirus?
Sapovirus, okay. So she unknowingly ingested poop. So what is this virus exactly?
Well, I think so. It says I unknowingly ingested poop, and everybody, like... clicks on it, right? But that's a lot of infections that people get are called fecal oral transmission. And that's why they say that, you know, especially if you're sick with one of these viruses or something, you have to be extra careful washing your hands after you go to the bathroom. Because even if a kid in your house has it and doesn't wash their hands and touches the doorknob, then you touch the doorknob, then you pick something out of your teeth. That's how you do it. So she didn't like eat a turd, you know what I mean? Like, but that's how it happens with a lot of infections. So this is just like, it causes gastroenteritis. She said she was like peeing out of her butt or something, right?
Yeah. So she thought she had COVID at first and she was sick for weeks. So finally she did a stool test and that's when she discovered she had this virus. But she thinks it came from a salad she ate at a local place that said they're closing down for unrelated reasons, but I'm very curious about that. But then what I found, I mean, at least she was able to see the light in it. She also was joking about how ridiculous it was that she had to wear diapers and why are diapers like made pretty for women? Nothing about having to use a diaper as an adult is sexy. So why even bother in making them look cute? And I agree with that. I think it is funny.
So when I had salmonella when I was a kid, I was like in seventh grade. I think I was 12 or something. When I didn't really leave the house much once I figured out that I was having a serious problem. But for even my mom to bring me to the doctor, like I seriously thought that I was going to poop my pants because it was like pouring out of me. Like I couldn't even stop it. It was ridiculous. So I understand why she would wear a diaper as an adult because you could imagine just driving to the doctor's office. Like you don't want to shit in your car. That's probably the worst thing ever because how do you really ever get that smell out?
No, I can't imagine. You know, I've had a couple incidents in my life. Remember when I got my wisdom on the other end? Remember when I got my wisdom teeth out and I was throwing up so bad from the Percocets they gave me and they had to prescribe me a pill that dissolved in my mouth because I literally couldn't ingest anything?
Yeah, that was terrible.
And then when we were moving into the house you live in now, I had the worst virus slash potential food poisoning of my life. And I was, you know,
no, we all did. All of us did.
But I had it the day we were, like, the movie trucks were coming. And I had 20 minutes in between intervals. And your house now was like 17 minutes from the old house. So I was like, if I leave right this second, I get to the new house.
No, so I was sick at the same exact time. And I remember I was driving to my job at the hospital and I never called out ever because it was number one, because I just don't call out. But number two, if I ever call out, like, my whole entire month is hell after that, because they wouldn't have anybody cover for me. And I drove all the way to the hospital and I was in the car and I called my boss and was like, I'm just going to stay in here for a couple minutes. Like, I'm too weak to come in. Just give me a minute. Let me just, maybe I'll take a nap for like a half hour and then I'll come in. And I'm like opening the door of my car, throwing up in the parking lot. And I was finally like, Nicole, like,
what am I doing?
Yeah, I was just like, this is the most fucking ridiculous thing in the world. Like, I just can't call out. Like, I was legitimately so sick. And to think that, like, this was before COVID, obviously, to think that they would want me to come into the hospital that sick, where there's people that, like, potentially could have got whatever I had. I had to still go in the main space to go into the hospital. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that was ridiculous.
So this virus, I'm not sure if like everybody gets it, but she is considered immunosuppressed because she has MS. So she could have just, you know, any other person could have been exposed to it and she could have been fine, but she just got sick because she has MS. So
yeah, at least she was able to find the light in the situation now that she's better.
All right, next story.
Okay, Kourtney Kardashian posted to her Instagram story that she was feeling sick, so she, quote, pounded a glass of breast milk. So, is there any benefits at all to an adult drinking breast milk?
As of right now, there's nothing that says that it's recommended for adults to drink it. But I don't think it would harm you for sure. It's just like there's all these things that come out that say it may have properties in it that could help you from illness and this and that. And they've been saying that for like hundreds of years. But like as of right now, like the WHO, for example, recommends that children get breast milk. It's the best for them. But they don't have those recommendations for adults. So, I mean, you know, these people are just saying this for seeking attention, because that would get a lot of people to look at what she was saying, right? Because it's kind of, I've heard people do it, but don't you think that it grosses people out so much that they would draw attention to that?
Well, yeah. And I also think she gets criticized because she has this like crunchy granola way of living, you know? So it's part of that.
The girl that makes fun of her on Instagram, I don't even know what her name is. She's just so fucking dead on. She's hilarious. And she's always just like, is that organic? Like,
yeah. She really does such a good job with the shaking salads and the post-its on her fingers when she's blowing. Oh my
God, it's so good.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's part of that. You know, a lot of backlash I've been seeing she's been getting about this is that if she has such an excessive amount of breast milk that she can drink it herself, she should be donating it to, you know, there's places where mothers who can't generate their own breast milk or babies that can't get it, you know, could benefit from having real breast milk, and instead she's just drinking it herself. So I do think that is something to consider. You know, we don't think about the benefits it has for babies when we're producing extra, maybe. So it would be in her best interest to donate it to somebody who could really use it.
Yeah. I had a friend that was pregnant at the same time as me, and she used to have like a freezer full of it. She just got so much. And I was always like, yo, like, I have two bags in the freezer, so, like, once that's out, like, it was enough to go to dinner or something, and that was it. I just couldn't get it like that. It was, like, really interesting. But, so, side note, there's, like, a thing that bodybuilders like to drink breast milk because they think it helps them, like, build muscle and with with less fat. So, there's this whole entire market where you can go and buy breast milk, like, off the internet. And of course,
buy anything off of the internet.
And of course, it's like not regulated. So it's like, just think about that. Would you really feel comfortable just like buying cow's milk from some farm that was selling it online? Because you can get so many sicknesses from milk if it's not refrigerated properly. Or like with breast milk, for example, you're using like this pump machine that you use to clean water and stuff. Like you have to sterilize everything in between, because if you don't, like you can contaminate it with bacteria and stuff.
I had a funny thought because we go, there's this farmer's market near my house every Saturday in the summer, and we go there, and sometimes I buy cheese from the stand. It's a dairy farm and they sell cheese and stuff. But I'm thinking if somebody just pitched a table and was selling their own breast milk,
or breast milk
people
cheese.
Would be freaking out.
Yeah.
It seems like, I don't know, because you're saying there's no known benefits to it, so maybe guys just have mommy complexes or something. But
I don't want to say that there's not known, because there has been research done that says that there's these properties in it, but like there hasn't been enough studies done to say that, and there's probably a reason for that actually, because what if they say there's health benefits for adults, then what happens? Like people, like that's just going to open the door to this whole other thing that, like, because you know, like I let my milk dry up, but if I just didn't do that and I had someone or something sucking on it all the time, like I'd still have milk and my kids are 10 years old. You know what I mean?
Well, like, some people breastfeed their kids.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So like it could be this whole other market of like people making money to sell it to people, and then there's not going to be regulations because the government takes 20 years to catch up, and all these people are going to get weird sicknesses, and it's just go down the rabbit hole.
I just like, yeah, I don't think it's for me, but if you want to do it, then do you.
Do you, exactly. That's my theory on life. Like, I don't give a shit what you do as long as it doesn't affect me. All right, freak accidents.
So a Chinese tourist in Indonesia fell 250 feet to her death while trying to take a photo on the edge of an active volcano. So this woman and her husband climbed to the top of this volcano on a guided tour. The tour guide has come out and said she was repeatedly warned to stay far away from the edge of the cliff. And they kept taking pictures. And then I think she was wearing a skirt. It just said long piece of clothing, but from the picture, it looked like a skirt. But anyway, she tripped up in the skirt, fell to her death ultimately.
This would probably happen to me, honestly, because like one of my bucket list dream things is to go see an active volcano. I would love that. But I wouldn't wear a skirt. Like I feel like, you know, when you're going to do like an outside activity, aren't you like, oh, I like something like that that requires a hike and everything. Like, aren't you like, let me put on like a good pair of thick jeans and a pair of like hiking boots. Like, why would you wear a skirt? And she lifted her leg in post. Did you see the actual picture she took?
Yeah. Like, I just want to say, I feel like obviously it was ruled accidental and it was obviously an accident, but it was definitely not a smart decision on any hiking situation to wear long, loose, hanging clothing, right? Because the likelihood of you getting injured, or in this case, dying, is high. But I also feel like, why wouldn't the tour guide be like, you can't come up wearing that?
Yeah, like, what if you had to run away from a bear? I don't know.
Yeah, like, I feel...
I'm just saying, like, any animal... Like, I always think, like, there could be a situation where you have to run... Or, like, the ground could get loose, just anything.
I feel like the company has some type of responsibility in this where, you know, like, they know the dangers they're facing, right? So why weren't they like, yo, homegirl, like, you can't be wearing that going up there.
Well, remember we covered that story in the gross room from that volcano was it in New Zealand or Australia? It was like the island that people would visit, and it was a tour that was off of like a cruise, right?
Yeah.
And then people went there and got these.
They took a boat there from the mainland.
Yeah, and they got seriously burned, and some of them even died, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, these tours are, there's probably like a shit ton of paperwork you sign because you're going to see some kind of natural thing, although that didn't really seem to get her. But it was even crazier that they said that they had to rescue her, so they had to go get her somehow. They said it took like 2 hours to get her out, but...
Yeah, I was actually wondering about that with the risk, because wasn't it the case with the Wakari volcano that they like detected activity but still went on the tour anyway or something like that? I guess what I'm getting at is maybe... If they were detecting a lot of activity, they wouldn't have sent rescuers down, but maybe because they could sense it was chill, they felt safe sending other people down. Because I would think if they thought an incident was about to happen, they wouldn't therefore then risk other people's lives trying to rescue somebody.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So,
I don't know, but yeah, she died. It took them 2 hours to get her, all because she tripped on her skirt, so.
See, I just, like, when I read this story, I'm like, I want to go there now. It just, I like, wanna I, go I'm there. So fascinated by, like, volcanoes especially. I just think they're so cool.
I feel like I'm not more adventurous with certain things like this because I know I am such a klutz and I don't even want to put myself in the situation for something like this to happen to me.
Yeah.
Because I know it's inevitable. Okay, so last April, a 64-year-old Montana woman became seriously ill after eating a sushi roll with salmon and morel mushrooms at a local restaurant. So morel mushrooms are considered edible. However, the CDC has warned that they need to be fully cooked to prevent toxic effects they could hold. And this restaurant had them imported from China. So within 1 hour of eating the sushi, this woman was one of over 50 people to become seriously ill. She spent the next 2 weeks in the ICU as the toxins from the mushroom slowly destroyed her liver and kidneys. It damaged her throat so badly that she had to communicate her final words with her family by writing with marker on a piece of paper. And she was one of two people that died from these mushrooms at this restaurant.
This is the thing that I have a problem with, because we like to eat different foods and stuff. Like, if you go to, like, I didn't even know this. So as a consumer, you go and you get sushi. I guess they do give you the warning if you're eating undercooked sushi, there's a risk of you getting like a fish tapeworm or something.
Yeah, but I think the implication is with fish, not.
Yeah, I never even would have thought of that.
I would never, as a restaurant owner, I would never take the liability of serving something that has known effects if it's not cooked properly, correct? I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about meat, but mushrooms, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you could say the same thing about meat too, but do you think it's possible that the people that own the restaurant don't know that for sure, that they have to be cooked at a certain temperature? But
that's their responsibility to know. Like, you, for example, you might take on the risk of having food, but you have to have, at least in America, at least you have to have ServSafe certification in your kitchen. So in that course, you learn the exact temperatures, everything has to be stacked or cooked. You learn how to stack things in the fridge. So if something drips onto another thing, you know, if that gets cooked, the bacteria gets cooked off at the correct temperature. There's a whole thing behind it. So,
yeah, but isn't that really just for like meat and dairy? Like, they wouldn't do something so specific like mushrooms, right?
Yeah, but if you're ordering this specific type of mushrooms, you must be familiar with it, because why wouldn't you just get if you're importing this specific kind of mushroom, you have to be aware of it and what it does and if it has specific flavor profile, because why would you be getting those when you could use any other mushrooms in the world?
They were saying that the people, I think I'm very also interested in epidemiology a lot ever since I read the Hot Zone book. It's so interesting to me, people that do that for a living. So I was reading on the CDC website, like, how they figured out that this was how all the people were getting sick. And it's just really cool that all these people are going to surrounding ERs and having the same symptoms, but they were getting sick within an hour of eating, like, so sick, going to the hospital.
Yeah, and that's very uncommon for food poisoning. Food poisoning typically takes 12 to 24 hours to kick in. So if something's happening immediately, it's more than likely something like this, or really
like a toxin. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely something to consider, because it is very unusual that food poisoning would kick in so quickly, unless, you know, you might go to like, I can't have soy, for example. So if I had soy, I would get sick pretty quickly because my body is allergic to that, so it wants to get rid of it immediately or react to it immediately. But if I got food poisoning from something and so did my husband, it would take hours for that to set in and then develop the symptoms. So I don't know. To me, this is a fault of the restaurant 100%. I think if you're importing such a rare, if you are using an ingredient such as these mushrooms that have to be imported, you should also know everything about them, because why not use baby bella or white or shiitake? You know, anything.
Well, because
we can get
they're
here.
It's because they're a delicacy. They're like $40 a pound. That's probably.
And if they're a delicacy, you should know everything about them. So this is just how I feel about it. Like, you're purposely seeking out this unique ingredient. It is your job to know everything about it. So That's that on that, in my opinion.
No, I know. I feel the same way.
But anyway, the restaurant's been hit with a wrongful death suit, but they, as far as this article suggests, are still open and in business. So I don't know how to feel about that either.
I just think that I don't understand why they're allowed to be here if they can make people that sick. If I guess it's the same with me. Like, you can't ban everything.
I don't know. I just think this is like
how
really...
often are they served in restaurants?
Yeah, but this is like direct negligence in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, the same could be said about anybody that gets food poisoning, I guess.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by CrimeCon.
Guys, I just finished my lecture and submitted it, and it's so good. I hope you love it.
Yeah, it is going to be really awesome. It's called Deadside Manor, so you guys definitely don't want to miss it. I was looking at CrimeCon's Instagram the other day, and they officially announced Nancy, so we could relax now. Because we kind of had the feeling she was going, but, you know, we didn't want to get a little presumptuous over here.
Yeah.
But
oh, my God. I
so excited
I just can't wait. And I can't wait to meet Cheryl, and I can't wait to meet Dr. Bird and Joseph Scott Morgan. All these people are so awesome. I hope we get to hang out with them. That'd be so cool.
And then I got an email saying they were doing a special event that was a sip and draw with a courtroom illustration artist. So I am really looking forward to that one personally. I was reading about it. It seems super cool. It is immediately after your lecture. So well, sorry, but I'm ditching. Yeah.
I might go and just sip all the drinks that are around there because I'll be like so like relaxed after I do my lecture.
But you guys don't want to miss their announcements. So you could follow them at CrimeCon on Instagram or join their free mailing list at crimecon.com/email. And then you could be in the know. Definitely share all the speakers with your friends and family. We are definitely very excited and we are looking forward to seeing and meeting you guys there.
Oh, can't wait. Thanks, CrimeCon. All right, let's get started with violent crime.
So really disturbingly, this 14-year-old has allegedly invited her friend to see her mom's corpse after killing her. So Carly Madison Gregg was arrested last month and charged with the murder of her mother and attempted murder of her stepfather. Their home security cameras showed her and her mother returning home from being out. Within minutes, Carly is seen going into her mother's bedroom, then gunshots are heard as well as screaming. So in the minutes after the gunshots, video shows that she walked into the kitchen and was texting. Prosecutors believe, based on the time frame, that she was texting her stepfather asking when he would be home. In the meantime, she's seen being calm, singing to her dog, and then that's when she invites the friend over to see her mother's dead body. So you must be thinking, like, this friend who's a teenager is probably like, what the F is going on here? She even shows the friend the weapon. She confesses to the murder. Finally, the stepdad gets home. She shoots him in the shoulder, but he was able to get the gun away from her. She ran out of the house and was captured shortly after.
Yeah, I think the most disturbing part is obviously when she called the friend and she called the friend over and said, I have an emergency. And then the friend's dad drove his daughter over to the house.
Oh, my God.
And then she was like, hey, have you ever seen a dead body? And then proceeds to show her dead mom. It's just like really bizarre behavior. And I was hoping that there was going to be more info on this story because sometimes you think like, all right, well, that's a little weird that she wants to kill her mom and her stepdad. Like, did anything happen there that like has been happening her whole life? And maybe she snapped because of that, or is she just really disturbed or has some kind of underlying mental health illness that she was just so nonchalant about it? Because, you know, for example, like when Gypsy Rose killed her mom, like that whole thing went down, she just seemed like a little bit more chill about it because it was like this lifelong abuse that it wasn't like in a moment of rage. And maybe it could be something like that, or it could just be like, who knows? They didn't give any information. Like, did she, are friends shocked about this? Did this just come out of the blue? Like, what's surrounding this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. My first thought was maybe based on her behavior. I mean, you have to think, if she's acting so calm about it, it's either she's in a situation of abuse or she is really disturbed and just doesn't let this bother her, which is really disturbing for me. I don't know, like, My first thought was definitely something maybe was going on in the house, but the mother was a teacher. That doesn't necessarily mean she wasn't doing anything wrong. I don't know. I'm definitely really interested to see what comes out about this case, especially because the stepfather survived, so we'll have all the information from him.
Yeah, totally.
But it's really scary just to think you can just kill your mother and try to kill your stepfather, no big deal, and then just go about your day, and that you would also subject your friend to that horror as well.
Yeah, it's just, it's really nuts.
Because I'm thinking, like, the friend might even be scared that she's next, right?
Oh, yeah. I would, it must be completely terrifying to see that someone that you know has just killed someone and the weapon is still sitting there next to them. And
looking, they're just being so relaxed about it, like, no big deal.
Yeah, it's so scary. All right, so this next story technically is an accident, but I put it under violent crime just because of how it went down.
A drunk driver at the Swan Boat Club in Michigan drove into the building at the club, plunging 25 feet inside. On the other side of the wall she hit was a child's birthday party where she killed two siblings, a 5-year-old boy and 8-year-old girl. At least 15 other people were wounded, including 9 with life-threatening injuries, 6 adults and 3 children, and they all went to the hospital.
I just hate drunk drivers. I can't stand hearing stories like this. Some parents lost their two children, a brother and sister, 5 and 8 years old, got killed because of this asshole. Like,
and how messed up do you have to be to go into a building like this?
Well, she was drunk. She probably didn't intentionally crash into a building. She just was drunk and not driving straight. Like,
no, I agree with that. But to me, that's like blackout drunk level. Like, you didn't just have a couple and thought you could get home. Like, you were totally annihilated.
Yeah. And I mean, it happens every day and it's always innocent people. And did she die? No, of course not.
No. Like, so the driver was a 66-year-old woman. She's now been charged with 2 counts of second degree murder, 2 counts of operating while intoxicated, causing death, and 4 counts of operating while intoxicating, causing serious injury. And you know what? All I can help but think is she'll go to jail for like 5 years and get out and just do it again.
Even if she goes to jail, though, for whatever, like, it doesn't help anything. Even if she went to jail for the rest of her life, like, what? Who cares about her? Like, this is going to forever. And think about the woman that was holding the birthday party for the kids. She must feel terrible because it wasn't, I believe they weren't her kids that were killed. So imagine having a birthday party for your kids and inviting people over to celebrate your kid's birthday and then other kids die at your kid's birthday party.
I mean, everybody that was there's life is affected forever because of this. And this lady probably doesn't even give a shit because she's a piece of shit. And I don't even think going to jail is going to do anything to her. It's just like, oh, whatever, it happened.
Well, hopefully she'll burn in hell. All right, let's get into some medical news.
A study from Harvard University found that men who ejaculated 21 times per month, either from masturbation or intercourse, were 31% less likely to get prostate cancer than men who ejaculated 4 to 7 times per month.
You want to keep the juices flowing. The thing is that it makes sense because there could be like toxin buildup inside the prostate. So the more you're pushing it out, the less likely that would have an effect to potentially cause any cancer. The thing is that, dude, 21 times a month is almost every day.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
How do you even have time for that?
Well, clearly some people do.
It's compared to people that do only 4 to 7 times a month, it's just like, I don't know. It just seems like a lot. It seems like it has to be on your mind every single day. And like, how do you work and like have a family and just like function every day, go to your kids' activities? It's just like every single day. It's just kind of a lot to me.
It might just be.
I'm not a dude though, so I don't know.
It might just be part of some people's morning or nighttime routine. They just, you know, take a shower, brush your teeth, get off and go about their day. So like, you just don't know. But
well,
good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Exactly. All right, next story.
So recent research has suggested that people are better off with female doctors. So men and women have better outcomes when they are treated by a female physician. They have lower rates of mortality and readmission than those treated by male physicians. Data from Medicare claims between 2016 to 2019 include over 400,000 female patients and more than 300,000 male patients, roughly 31% of both the male and female patient groups were treated by a female doctor. And that's how they got this statistic.
Yeah, I think that it's duh. Like, I don't know. I personally think that this isn't like mind blowing to me at all. I wasn't shocked.
I don't think so either.
But they're saying that like female doctors and male doctors always practice medicine a little bit different because, and they didn't say which way this goes, but they said that one of the sex groups doesn't follow guidelines as properly and have bad communication skills. So like, I wonder who that is.
Right. Yeah. Think about relationships and patient care, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, think about, like, just trying to tell your husband to, like, actually, be quiet while you're trying to record and, like, how that communication goes down.
No, actually, I've been, for the past couple weeks, writing up the Bad Surgeon documentary for The Gross Room, and I know you haven't read my research yet, but this goes directly hand-in-hand, patient care and relationships. This absolute douchebag. So I'll elaborate more on that once that post comes out, but if anyone's watched Bad Surgeon, they know exactly what I'm talking about. So
yeah, so I'm really not surprised, but the thing is that the unfortunate part of this is that women only make up 37% of doctors in this country right now. So, and they tend to practice, like, there's higher amount of women in pediatrics, but in things like orthopedic medicine and sports medicine and stuff, it's like super, super low percentage.
Yeah, it's only
of women.
Like 7% yeah. of women are in sports medicine.
So I don't know if that means that there's like worse prognosis with people that are getting orthopedic stuff done or whatever. I don't know, but it's interesting, right? It's not interesting. It's like, duh, right?
I actually met at a Phillies game, I guess 2 years ago, this woman that was an eye doctor for the Sixers, and she seemed like she had a pretty awesome life. So I think more women should go into sports.
Yeah, but I don't know if that would be considered sports medicine, though. Sports medicine's like when Bryce Harper like has to get surgery on his elbow and stuff. I mean, she could work for the Sixers, and that could be if she's an eye doctor because they, you know, some people have to wear glasses or whatever, and it might be difficult to play. But I don't know if you would consider that to be sports medicine. But
yeah, I don't.
She's
know,
still. But I'm sure she gets paid really well, and then you get to hang out with ball players all day and stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and she was a nice lady, so.
All right, like, so let's talk about, like, a specific male doctor.
Yeah, speaking of male doctors, Dr. Louis Kwong, a Harbor UCLA Medical Center surgeon, has been fired for a variety of misdemeanors. So after a 2-year investigation, they found that he regularly gawked at genitalia of anesthetized patients and never disclosed that he was being paid by a medical device company whose products he used on patients. How nice.
Yeah, so he got paid a lot, like almost $1 million, $700,000 for some company that was telling him to use these joint replacements, and then he was using them in patients and not disclosing that he was getting paid. I actually am surprised by this because this used to happen a lot back in the day, and I thought that there's been a ton of laws like that this can't happen anymore, so I guess it can. I don't know, because you have to think about that. Like, let's say, for example, you go to the doctor and you want to get, you're just like, oh, I'm just having irregular periods. And they're like, oh, well, you could use this IUD, or you get something that they're talking you into, kind of. Like, if you found out that the more of those they sold, the more money they were getting, that's kind of like not cool. So they're not supposed to be able to do that anymore.
Is this not the case with pharmaceuticals too?
No, there's all these rules now. Things have changed because they used to come to the hospital and they used to like bring us all this stuff. Like, we used to get like crazy stuff, lunches and this and that. And now there was some kind of rule that like they could come and bring a lunch, like if it was during a lecture, but they couldn't just come bring us presents all the time. There's rules because of this. I'm telling you, because it was affecting patient care big time. And I guess they're saying that this guy didn't disclose it. So maybe if you do disclose it, it's okay. You're like, hey, just to let you know, like, I use all these joint replacements, but they also give me kickbacks. Maybe if you just say it out loud, that's fine. But this is the least of his problems, okay? Least.
Yeah. Okay. So colleagues told investigators that he, quote, looked under the surgical covers of black males who were under anesthesia and discussed the, quote, genitals of the day, and also discussed his favorite sex positions and his preference for autoerotic asphyxiation. So First of all, like, imagine just your coworker in general talking to you about being into autoerotic asphyxiation. Can you explain what that is for everybody?
Well, it's when you cut off your air supply, basically, when you're getting ready to climax. So you apparently it's like a more intense feeling, but people accidentally kill themselves while doing it because you're cutting off the oxygen supply to your brain.
And so, we actually have a dissection about this because that's how David Carradine died, correct?
Yeah. And I just think, I mean, listen, this guy, think about his coworkers and stuff. See, this is the problem, because when you work in the hospital, sometimes like the surgeon's like the top of the line, right? So a lot of people work at like scrub techs and everybody else that are in there, nurses, they're hearing this shit, but like he's the boss kind of, right? For years and years and years. And everybody probably, listen, I've worked with scumbag doctors that everybody's just like, that dude's a pervert, just like stay away from him or whatever. But now, like if I worked in that environment now, it would be different, because now it's like, oh, you probably should say stuff about that now. But back 20 years ago, no, that was like kind of okay.
Yeah, you're just like, this dude's a freak.
Yeah, this guy is a freak. He was like commenting on pubic hair patterns and stuff. It's just, it makes you feel gross, because you've been, like, I've been under anesthesia before getting like stuff in my GYN area done. And I don't want to think that my doctor was like looking at how my pubes were shaved. That's so weird. It's gross.
It's fucking horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And the worst part is, you know, they said this behavior's been going on for a decade and they've been aware of it since 2016. So why did it take till 2021 for him to go under investigation?
Because he makes money for the hospital.
Oh, wait. So then they fire him, right? And they give him this like discharge paperwork telling him the reasons why he was fired. But they conveniently left out the fact that he had brought a gun to the OR, and he had one time brought a knife to the OR as well.
Yeah, there's like this picture of him, and he has, is he like a military, a former military person? He looks like he's wearing like SWAT gear. Or he's like packing at the hospital.
Maybe he's just a doomsday prepper.
He's a something, I'll tell you that.
I don't know. But yeah, so then they were like, the entire time the investigation was going on, he was on paid administrative leave. So he was like making all of this money. He was the eighth highest paid county employee. How nice is that, that this guy's getting paid all this money while he's being investigated for this, when there's been reports of it for nearly a decade? How does that make you feel?
I'm not surprised. Like, just from what I've seen working. What about Amy Loughran's story about how at the hospital covering up a serial killer for years? Like, this is like what these places do. They just kind of sweep it under the rug, because like which is weird, because that story comes out now and you think like all those, like right now, if we lived in California and we had to get a procedure done, would you ever even want to go there? Because you're like, cool, they're going to be looking at my vag and like judging it and stuff, like.
But isn't it better to come out and say, we learned of this behavior and fired this person, instead of covering it up for years and then it coming out in the news? Because now I'm like, I don't trust you at all.
Yeah.
If I heard it first, I'd be like, that sucks, but at least they took care of it.
So the next story is about this new change that is happening in Disney World, or so Disneyland, or both, right?
Well, it's Disney, the parks. So, well, I think just in America, but Disney recently updated their disability policies, so it will take effect in Disney World on May 20th and in Disneyland on June 18th. So their website notes that the DAS passes will now only be available to, quote, guests who, due to developmental disabilities like autism or similar, are unable to wait in a conventional queue for an extended period of time. So basically, these new guidelines mean that people with other disabilities that were eligible for the DAS will be determined on a case-by-case basis by a Disney's accessibility team. So this story is coming up because this 26-year-old content creator says she no longer feels welcome at the parks because of the changes. So she was born with a rare eye disorder. What is it called?
Oh, achromatopsia.
What is that?
It is when she has a limited ability to look at color. She has like a problem with her color vision, but she also has sensitivity to light. So even if she's outside with sunglasses on, she still has a hard time. So I guess she was saying that before she even knew that she was eligible for this, she would just go, when she went to Disney, she would just wait until it was nighttime with the extended hours just so she didn't have to be out in the sun like that. And then she found out about this and it kind of changed her life. So the DAS passes a disability access service, and that allows people to go on rides and stuff. Like, they don't have to wait in the classic line that everybody has to. They could wait somewhere where they're more comfortable, which would totally make sense if you have a child or something with autism, just because sometimes you have to wait outside and it's 1,000 degrees for an hour, like standing super close to people. So it makes sense for certain people that can't do that. But I kind of support Disney because people are abusing the shit out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, we've seen it and I've seen the increase. I've been going to Disney my entire life. And every single time I go, it's just like, it's just creeping up on so many people that are using this kind of a service to cut it ahead in line when, like, they might have something a little bit. They don't feel like walking. They don't feel like they could walk, whatever. But, like, it's getting abused for sure. That's why they're doing this.
Yeah, and I guess this girl's getting a lot of criticism because she hasn't applied yet, I guess, with their accessibility team, so she doesn't know whether she still is or isn't eligible for it, but she's trying to bring awareness to it on TikTok so people are aware of it when they go to the park. But, you know, people are just being dicks as usual, saying that she exploited it and now that's why too many people are using it. And I don't think she single-handedly contributed to people overusing it, but I think that is certainly what's happening in this case, is too many people are trying to take advantage of it. But it just sucks for people that need it and now have to go through additional steps just because people are assholes and use things they shouldn't.
I just think that a lot of people, like, I have an underlying health condition that I could probably be like, oh, I can't stand out in the sun that long in the line, right? I mean, that would probably not be good for me, but, like, I just would never do that because I'm like, there's clearly people that need that service way more than I would, and it's just kind of, it's just like a little bit of abuse to me.
There's definitely people that take advantage of it. You know, it's like, you know, I know some people, and this drives me absolutely crazy, that know somebody with a handicap thing for the car and they use it even when they're not driving that person around, just when they're with their normal healthy selves. And I'm like, why are you using this when it's for people to use that actually can't get around okay?
I don't know. Like, I just would never do that because it would just make me feel really gross.
I feel like it says a lot about someone's personality if they use the handicap placard, you know?
Yeah.
I just think about that.
No, I agree. Like, I think it's good for certain situations. Like, I mean, people that can't walk and things like that.
No, people
like,
that should have that it should have it.
Yeah.
But totally healthy people that don't need it absolutely should not be using it.
All right, let's get into some other death news.
A woman in Philadelphia is in shock after her father's ashes were stolen from her car. So she said she went to get in her car Tuesday morning to go to work, and she noticed that her car was ransacked. She had about $20 in loose change in the car that was gone, and so was her father's urn. So my first question was, why are you leaving an urn in the car? But this woman saying her dad died 5 years ago and he was a mechanic and she liked having him on the road. It was all she had left of him, and she hasn't been able to locate the urn. So she's very, you know, distraught about it, which I understand. But of all places, you don't leave anything in your car in Philadelphia limits at all.
I just think it sucks that, like, I mean, listen, why can't she leave it in her car? Like, why can't she? Because people are going to steal it. Like, there's like these two sides to it. It's like, number one, okay, anybody knows in Philadelphia right now, that's like a huge problem. Breaking into cars, carjacking, stealing cars. So you wouldn't leave anything in there valuable because, but at the same time, it's like, well, why do these people just deserve to go into your personal property and take your shit? Like, It's just not fair.
No, it's fucked up. And it's like, who takes an urn? You know what it is. It's not right.
Who takes $20 worth of change? Like, it's the same person. It's just like, and a lot of times, because I've seen this happen with someone that I used to be friends with, like, when the people go in the car and they steal all of this stuff, and then they bring it to local bars and restaurants and try to sell it to get money to patrons.
Who's selling an urn?
they don't even realize what it is. They just take it. Like they just take whatever is there that could just be like, listen, last night I went to CVS, right? And it was like the deodorant was locked up. I had to call them to open the deodorant, even though there's skincare products right next to it that cost double. And then I go to get Tylenol. The Tylenol's all locked up, but the Advil isn't and the Excedrin isn't.
Yeah, but it's based off of their records of what's stolen the most.
But I'm saying like the reason is because people steal that stuff and then they bring it to places and try to sell it for cheaper than it's sold for and people buy it. I don't know who's buying deodorant off of a person like that, but
well, whatever. When I lived in South Philly, like I know for a fact I locked my car at least two or three times, but it was parked out front of my house. And there's this device people can use, especially if you have the push button start that like will signal the key fob if it's within a certain proximity and unlocked my car door. So there was two or three times I went outside and I never left anything in my car and somebody would break in my car, take all my papers out of my driver's or the glove box and just throw them in the front seat. It was so infuriating. And then I'm like, cool, total violation. Somebody was in my car. It would smell sometimes. I hated that. You cannot, it's not her, obviously not her fault this happened, but you cannot leave anything in your car in a major city because these people that break into the cars just don't care. They will do whatever. Some people just break into cars and like piss in them or sleep in them, you know?
Yeah, it's terrible. I whatever. It's just like, this is living around here. Like you're just kind of asking for it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. All right. Last case.
Okay. Five families are suing the Alabama prison system and UAB Medical Center claiming their loved ones' organs were stolen after autopsies. So the families say their loved ones were serving time at either Limestone Correctional Facility or Hamilton Aged and Infirm Center when they died and all of their autopsies were performed at UAB Medical Center. And then when the bodies were sent to the funeral homes after the autopsies, their organs were missing.
All right, so I could kind of explain what happened here because I think one of the places that I used to work had a similar lawsuit for a reason like this. But when you die, you have to get an autopsy if you die in custody, anytime a person dies in custody. And then that would be considered one that's under jurisdiction of like coroner medical examiner system because that they're the ones that are in charge of ordering the autopsy, whereas like at a hospital, the family would be in charge of signing a permission form to do the autopsy. So if I'm in jail, right, and I die, I'm going to go get an autopsy. They're not going to call you and ask you if it's okay because it's under the legal system. You don't really have a right to that. When a body goes, so I used to work at an educational or academic university hospital system. When we would do the permission forms and we did the autopsies, if it was a full autopsy, we said that we were allowed to keep the organs. And the reason that we do is because, so for the brain autopsy, for example, especially if you have like neuropathology attached to it, when you take out the brain, you don't cut it right away. You put it in a formaldehyde mixture and you let it sit for like a week or two until it gets really, really hard. And then a neuropathologist will cut it in thin slices and they'll look at it with a bunch of medical students and pathology residents. And that's really the best way to look at the anatomy and to teach. It's a teaching hospital, right? Well, the family's never going to get the brain back, like, because we keep it to do that. It does help too with the diagnosis for sure, but it's like, that's kind of the thing when you're at a teaching institute. And the same thing with saving organs. Like we always save pieces of organs just in case we ever have to go back to something. But if somebody has some like really cool pathology or something, like we would keep it aside. Like, oh, this person's got TB. Like you'll never see that again. Let's put that lung aside so we could show med students and things like that. So I think they're just kind of, you know, the funeral home gets the body and there's no brain. Well, guess what? Like that happens in most autopsies. Like the brain doesn't just go back with them all the time because I mean, all the autopsies I've done, honestly, like I've never put the brain back.
Sorry if this is a stupid question, but like if the funeral homes in theory are getting the bodies sewn back up, how do they know there's no organs in them?
So they have to open them up anyway. Like we sew them up and just so they don't leak in the car and stuff on the way to the funeral home. But they have to embalm them. So they have to open them up and access their carotid arteries to embalm them.
Okay.
Obviously, the circulatory system is disrupted because everything in the middle is gone. So they have to do it. They could still embalm the head, though, through the carotid arteries, and they'll find like the brachial arteries to do the arms and stuff. But so when you do it in another kind of like a community hospital setting, you would put the organs back in like a big biohazard bag or something, and then you would put them in and they would treat the organs, because if you just left them inside there, they would decompose and it would smell terrible. So they have to kind of open up and see what's going on in there. But even when I worked at a community hospital, we would still save the brain aside for it to fix for a couple weeks before cutting it. So I think a lot of times people like look for these loopholes to do these lawsuits and to make drama when it's like nobody's like keeping them to sell them to the black market or something. It's like you're keeping them because of whatever reason. Like,
I guess they have to make sure that's what's going on, which is why the lawsuit's going forward.
And I think like the thing is that the weird thing is that they're not signing permission for it. But like, I think you lose those rights when you're in prison and you have to get the forensic autopsy. It's just like if you get murdered. Like if I got murdered and went to the Camden County Medical Examiner's office or something, you call them up and say, I really don't want my mom to have an autopsy. Please don't do it. They're going to be like, yeah, we're doing it. Like, you don't have a choice. Whereas if I die in the hospital, you are the one that decides if I get an autopsy. If you don't want one, then I don't get one.
So even if people have religious reasons, they're going to do it anyway?
They will do it anyway, but they try to respect. Like, if you called and were screaming and crying, and let's say I got shot in the chest and said, please, just don't take out her brain. Don't mess up her hair. Like, people have all different excuses why they don't want their family member to get an autopsy. Sometimes they might say, okay, we won't take out the brain because, like, really, we know she got shot in the chest, so, like, we don't need to. But they legally, they can be like, no, we're doing it. We don't care. Yeah. And like religious reasons all the time. Like people get shot all the time, and most religions aren't opposed to autopsy. It's more of like the burial time and stuff. So yeah, like when it comes to the law, like you don't really have a choice, although people try to respect as much as possible, but still get their job done.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on this and then see how it turns out. So on to questions of the day. Every Friday, ask us a question on the @MotherKnowsDeath Instagram. You could ask us whatever you want. We put a little graphic in our story, usually around Friday morning, and then you could ask away. So first, do families request to do cultural rituals before an autopsy is performed?
I don't know about that, because that would be something you would probably ask a nurse that deals with patients that die a lot, because once the body comes to us and is in the refrigerator, we don't see anybody doing cultural religious things. But I'm sure when someone dies, like the priest comes in or whatever, like whatever, that's like a common thing. But that's not anything that I've ever had to deal with anyway.
How do you feel when people go under general anesthesia to get a ton of tattoos?
Do people do that?
I guess.
I think that's ridiculous. I think you're a total pussy if you even use a whole sleeve at once or something. If you even use that numbing gel, like, I just think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's like defeats the purpose of getting what tattoos have always been about. I'm not a fan of it.
I don't understand. Like, it's not necessary, in my opinion, to put your body through all of that.
But just, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, don't get a tattoo then if you don't want to deal with it.
Who's doing that, though? Like, who's even giving somebody anesthesia so that they can get tattooed like that?
I don't know, but is it a thing? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Or is it all just right. Like, even, I have heard of people doing like injections of lidocaine or something. Lidocaine. Like, rather than the topical, you know, so they use the topical cream.
Yeah.
And then I've heard people doing local injections. So I guess, I don't know if a paramedic or a nurse would be allowed to do that. I just think it's like, if you can't handle the pain, then don't get it. It's just, I don't know. Like, isn't that the point? I just whatever.
All right, last, favorite childhood memory.
I'd say probably like going on vacations with my family and stuff. That was pretty cool. We took road trips a lot. That was really fun.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I don't feel like I have like a particular day, you know, that's in my head, but I feel like generally I had a really good childhood, so nothing stands out in particular, which I think is a better thing.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say that I always talk about this with Gabe, that I think that the best sign of having a really good childhood is that you really can't pick out a specific day, because like every day was pretty good.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it. Like I definitely know I was happy on trips. You know, I think about that time we went to Florida to stay at Dr. Wood's house, and I think
that trip wasn't
really a child. I was like 14 when
that was a really good trip. But then there was like the rat and everything.
Well, that's why I think it's a good.
We have good vacation stories for sure.
Yeah, because there was the rat in Louie's room, and then it's where we got pop up saying, "What's that noise?" from the seatbelt thing going off in the car. So we always say that. So
these muscles ain't sandy, are they? That came from that trip too.
Yeah, we went on some
a side of the road like clam shack, and my dad ordered mussels, and he says to the waitress, "Hey, these ain't sandy, are they?" It was hilarious. We're like, "Dad, please don't talk like that in public ever again."
Yeah, like I guess most of my favorite memories are like, we are a family of huge ball busters. So that's a lot of the times I think about is making fun of each other. So.
Yeah, totally.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Mother Knows Death. As a reminder, my training is as a pathologist assistant. I have a master's level education and specialize in anatomy and pathology education. I am not a doctor, and I have not diagnosed or treated anyone, dead or alive, without the assistance of a licensed medical doctor. This show, my website, and social media accounts are designed to educate and inform people based on my experience working in pathology so they can make healthier decisions regarding their life and well-being. Always remember that science is changing every day, and the opinions expressed in this episode are based on my knowledge of those subjects at the time of publication. If you are having a medical problem, have a medical question, or are having a medical emergency, please contact your physician or visit an urgent care center, emergency room, or hospital. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Mother Knows Death on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you get podcasts. Thanks.